You're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com, bringing you the freshest radio in Brooklyn since 2009. Hear directly from chefs to farmers, artists to architects, authors to brewers, and everyone in between. Check out all of our shows on our website or by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. The following program has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery. Cane Vineyard and Winery supports Heritage Radio and the growing movement to change how Americans eat and how we think about our planet. For more information, visit www.cane5.com.
I woke up this morning, I could barely breathe. Just an empty impression, the bed where you used to be. I want a kiss from your lips, I want an eye for an eye. I woke up this morning to an empty sky. Empty sky, empty sky. Woke up this morning to an empty sky. Empty sky, empty sky. I woke up this morning to an empty sky.
Heritage Radio Network. We're burning down the house here on September 11th, 2011. I'm Curtis B. Wayne. I'm here with Jessica Jamros, the designer of the New Jersey September 11th Memorial, which was dedicated yesterday, the day before today, the 10th anniversary and the day of remembrance for the events of 9/11/01. That was Bruce Springsteen with Empty Sky, the title of which, as I understand, I could be wrong, was the a bit of the inspiration for the design of the New Jersey 9/11 Memorial, which is in Liberty State Park, just across the water, from which spot many of the first responders gathered and from which spot people on 9/11 gathered to watch the horror of the spectacle, with dismay of the destruction of the World Trade Tower buildings. So we have Jess here. Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Jess has had a very busy last couple of days. Yesterday she was at the dedication of her memorial. Jess was last with us in episode 50 in December of 2010, and we talked at that time about the difference between a memorial and a monument. And as I look at the photos, I haven't yet been out to Liberty State Park, of Jess's work, I would say that it is both monumental and a beautiful memorial. Also joining us in studio is Vox Populi. Introduce yourself, please.
Hi, Drew Gurian.
Go a little close. Try that again.
I'm Drew Gurian.
And Drew is a photographer. Drew, were you at the events yesterday taking photos?
Yes, I was.
Very good. Well, before we jump into discussions in depth, let's meditate on where the time goes with a couple minutes of something from Richard Thompson.
Across the evening sky, mother birds are leaving. But how can they know it's time for them to go? Before the winter fire, I will still be dreaming have no thought of time. For who knows where the time goes? Who knows where the time goes?
Welcome back. Well, Jess, would you like to describe what your memorial is like? What's it look like? What's its idea?
It's a really hard day today to...
Would you like me to describe it?
You know, yeah. For me, it's you know, it's...
You're so deeply into it.
Yeah.
Well... As I understand, the idea is, as you're in Liberty State Park and you look across to where these buildings are missing, there is an axis of view. And so what you've done is you put up two parallel walls, rather high, so that the view is totally focused at the sky and across the river.
All right. You ready? I'm gonna come out.
Okay, come
of
on.
My
out.
Shell today.
All right.
The essence of the memorial, for me, where the design started, was this idea that the events of 9/11 affected us all very similarly. There is a wound in our hearts that we all feel about what took place that day. And so while sitting at the site and thinking about what 9/11 means and what 9/11 means to the state of New Jersey and its location of where it's located, there was first a mound that was created. Now I think that that mound is symbolic of the heart of New Jersey. And so there is a line where we've placed memorial walls, which is symbolic of the wound in our hearts. Mm. And the two towers are placed directly in line of where the former Twin Towers used to stand. And there's a couple of different geometries of these walls. First, the walls are 208 feet 10 inches long. That's a width of what one of the towers used to be. So when you're standing inside the walls, you get the enormity of what it would be like to stand at the base of the tower.
Wow.
The other proportion is, if you looked at the towers in the skyline, and if they were fallen onto the ground, that proportion gives the height of the memorial. And the width of the walls, the thickness, which is 3 feet. When you stand on the approach to the memorial, what you see symbolically is the two towers replaced back into that skyline.
That's excellent. And then we can walk between the walls. And the walls are clad in polished stainless steel.
They're clad in stainless steel, and we've the finish on the stainless steel was customized to create this. We've got 746 people that died from the state of New Jersey. All of their names are scrolling down the wall towards the river, towards Ground Zero. Their names are 4 inches, 3¾-inch height tall, large. Some of the largest names that I know of on any memorial, and I think of on any 9/11 memorial.
Sure.
And the finish on the stainless steel is so reflective, just reflective enough that you catch your reflection at the same time that you're viewing the names.
I think that's particularly beautiful.
And it's this amazing, touching moment when you touch the names. You get I get a sense of a connection between the living and the dead. And, you know, this memorial has always been about giving the families somewhere to go.
Right.
You know, only 40% of remains have been found. A lot of people don't have remains. They don't have a gravestone. They have nothing.
Right.
And I hope that, you know, and a lot of people don't want to go to Ground Zero. It's too hard.
I can't go there for that reason. It's a place that should never have been built on. I'm glad that there is space around and there's nothing built on where those buildings were. But still, that entire campus is for me. I've never been to Gettysburg for that reason. I once accidentally, driving through Maryland, found myself at Antietam, the battle where 70,000 men killed each other, and it was very upsetting. So for that reason, I totally understand.
And a similar thing is Potsdamer Platz in Berlin, where they've erased all traces of where the Berlin Wall once stood.
Yeah.
And you know, a number of architects planted a lot of corporate buildings, some you can't even go in.
Yeah.
And it's just wrong.
Yeah.
But Empty Sky. You know, Empty Sky, it's really about that. I mean, now that there's a memorial in New Jersey that replaces those twin towers, there's also, just before you enter the memorial, there are two relics from...
Yes, a piece of steel.
From Ground Zero. And I think that there's also another relationship there, which is speaking to the birth of the towers back into the skyline, the memorial walls.
So what are the two artifacts?
They're two beams.
Two pieces of steel.
Two beams. So the memorial walls are kind of the birth of the towers back into the skyline, and the beams are what was the death of them.
Yes.
I mean, it's just...
Beautiful. Yeah.
It's a hard day.
Yes, absolutely. We get some distance, and then we remember, and we cry a little bit, and then we calm down, and we realize that we must carry forward, and those who died would want it no other way but then to carry forward. And
may I share with you one thing from yesterday?
Please.
Rick Cahill is the chairman of the New Jersey 9/11 Memorial Foundation. He's been a complete wonderful man. He's my brother. I feel like he's my brother.
Yes.
And I've been working with him and his wife, Linda, and son were also there today, and they hadn't seen the memorial yet. And so before the ceremony and all the, you know, speeches were given, I asked Linda if she wanted to go inside the memorial walls before everybody, you know, got in there. And she first said no, because she wasn't sure she could handle it. And then I said, you know, really, maybe this would be a good moment. And she agreed. And we went in there. And she saw her son's name on the wall, and she started sobbing. So I started sobbing. And she hugged me, and she said, thank you. And then, as we continued walking through the walls, the sun was catching an orb, like it does. It's kind of a halo effect. And she was looking up towards the sky, and she said, this is so powerful. My son would be so proud to be here. And her spirit uplifted. Mm-hmm. And so we had this incredibly embracing moment. And then, you know, and for me to have helped just a little bit.
Yeah.
Means everything.
Yeah. Let's just sit with that for a moment before we have any music. Let's just sit with that. Burning Down the House on Heritage Radio Network, 9/11/11. I'm here with Jess Jamroz, designer of the New Jersey 9/11 Memorial. Jess was describing the halo effect, one of the wonderful coincidences. It happened more frequently than we may realize, is that when things are aligned just so, there are other aspects of nature which overcome us. In this case, the parallel walls of steel catch the sun at certain times of day and create a halo effect. And if you look at the picture that will be posted on our webpage, you'll see that effect. It That's what Jess was describing when Mrs. Cahill finally saw her son's name and experienced the memorial.
It's really a miracle.
That
halo
it
effect is. It was unexpected.
Yeah.
And it was. I mean, we expected reflections.
Yes, but it speaks to the rightness of the alignment and the proportion. You've got it right, and when we do get things right, it all works in a multiplier effect, which is a wonderful testament to your fantastic work.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. It is. It is on a level of poetry with Maya Lin's Vietnam memorial, which is also a very emotional place.
Thank you for that compliment.
No, you're very welcome. And in a way, I think it kicks it up a notch because it engages the sky and the sun in ways that very somber wound in the earth that Maya designed does not. It's only of the earth that memorial. Yours reaches into the sky, and the sky reaches back and embraces the people who are there to remember. And now, so if we look at the history of what we've been doing in the built landscape, what you've done is, in the history of architecture, we'd call it a cenotaph. Cenotaph. The ancient Romans and other ancient civilizations, and also our own civilization, when we have lost our beloved members of our community, of our humanity, and there is no place that is a gravesite that we can visit, no place to go to recollect and reconnect, then the memorial becomes the place where we can have that ritual reconnection with our lost ones. So if you've been to Rome, if you travel along the Via Appia Antica, you see the cenotaphs for the families, great and small, with their names and in some cases their likenesses, and they're there for all eternity. And those were places where their descendants could come and give thanks and praise and reconnect with the spirits of their kinsfolk. And so in this way you have made a cenotaph, because so many of people that we have lost are just atoms. There's no way of recovering any relics, anything to bury, and that's a wonderful thing. And it's such a beautiful coincidence that the sun engages with the forms that you've given.
It's not just that. There's also the future generations and educating the people of what happened on September 11th, that I think this memorial also specifically speaks to.
Yeah.
In 100 years from now, people will come to this place. They might not know anybody on the wall, but they will understand the relationship, I think, of New Jersey and how it's connected to New York.
Yeah.
And how 9/11... was connected iconically between New Jersey and New York.
Yes.
And another amazing thing is that this memorial sits on the same grounds as Ellis Island and the Statue of Liberty.
Mm.
And so these are all symbols of liberty,
mm-hmm.
peace, and friendship, and freedom.
Yeah.
And everything that our country stands for.
Yes, and the reason that we were attacked because of our liberty and our freedom, which offends some people in other parts of the world. And yet it's not a war memorial. It's not like the war memorials that are in Battery Park for World War II, with the big screaming eagle clutching arrows. And no, it's a peaceful, meditative memorial. And yet it's monumental also. That's good. The World Trade Center buildings were monumental. I don't know what they meant. In their absence, we know what they meant. In their absence, it meant that a period of unbridled optimism, that after the Second World War, that we could work things out, that we could engage those sectors of the world with whom we disagreed in dialogue. Well, I mean, after all, we got through the Cold War. The Russians and we did not bomb each other back to the Stone Age. We got through that.
Right. Well.
Yes.
Stonehenge.
Yes. And we don't even know what Stonehenge meant. But, so in 5,000 years, even if it's forgotten, why your memorial is there.
It's not mine.
That to which you gave birth through the action of your mind made real. I did want to talk about the whole process of, from your point of view, I wanted to hear from you, what it was like from sketch to model to construction to reality to invocation, convocation, and right up to that moment when you entered with Mrs. Cahill, which I would take as sort of the apotheosis, the final moment of its completion. After that.
You know, this project, you know, I'm one of two artists. Fred Schwartz has also done, you know, an incredible amount of work and spirit involved in the making. And I think that Fred has been a guiding light and an inspiration to me about how to make it possible. And so first, meeting him and working on this together, I think, you know, for the last 7 years has meant everything to me. He's given me this opportunity to build this memorial.
Yes.
And find the right channels to get it done. And so first it starts there. You know, sometimes when you can't find strength within yourself, you go to your friends.
Yeah.
And those conversations are what help give you your own courage to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. And so first there was Fred. And we worked together. We drew together. We sat in Liberty State Park together. And we saw this vision together.
Well, I'm glad that you're giving props to Fred Schwartz. That's important. He is vital to the creation of this. I don't know Fred, otherwise I would invite him, but I know you, and I wanted to get you back because we talked about this before it was made fully real. Actually, I don't think they started putting up the walls until January or
yes.
Something.
Yeah. Yes. So, but the process then from sketching to winning the competition,
yeah.
Which was a blind pool, which means that submissions were delivered to first a professional jury of architects and artists, mm-hmm. and professionals. And so they saw images and writing. They narrowed down the field, and then those submissions were given to a family jury, which is made up of all 9/11 family members and survivors. And then they unanimously selected our design. And that was a moment, right? That's a moment. That's 9/11 family members saying to you, what you see, I feel. Right? That day I cried, right? And from there, it's been 7 years of trying to make it happen. We've gone through three construction phases. The first construction phase was to build the mound and surcharge it so that all the settlement would take place. Mm-hmm. The second phase was landscaping and irrigation just to move it along. Mm-hmm. And this final, and we've gone through, I think it's four governors and three acting guards. I don't even remember. There's been so many.
Yeah, sure.
There has been so many. And I have to say, as a person, as an artist, working with people in politics, I have to be not political because I'm not political. It's about getting a memorial constructed. But Governor Christie made sure that this happened. His administration made sure that this happened for the families by the 10th anniversary. Mm-hmm. Now they have something.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
That is wonderful. And so this construction process for this final phase was really fast. We had 10 months to cut through the berm mm-hmm. and add the memorial walls. Wow, not a lot of sleeping. Probably need a good nap and the next couple of days. But
yeah.
We got through it. And the contractors, some of the best men and women that I have ever worked with. Hall Construction, Crystal Metalworks, Rocket Construction, Starco Electric. I'm sorry to be buzzing these people, but they
you should give them
everything.
Plugs, yeah. Terrific.
They made it happen, and everybody working on this project did it as a labor of love.
Yeah. Well, Jack, let's have 3 minutes of Barber's Adagio, and we'll come back and talk a little more technical talk.
All right, good.
Burning Down the House, Heritage Radio Network. This is Samuel Barber's Adagio, performed by the New York Philharmonic, Leonard Bernstein. Here we are in 9/11/11, Jess Jamroz, who, along with Frederick Schwartz, are the architects.
Oh, you can't call me an architect. I'm an artist.
You're an intern architect. You're a graduate architect, are you not?
Well, you know, I do what I do.
Do you have a degree in architecture? Where?
University of Buffalo.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, environmental design.
And architecture? You have a B.Arch? A B.A.?
I went to school for architecture.
That's good.
And I did installation work full scale because we had a great shop.
That's okay. I went to architecture school and I did theater. Now I do architecture and radio. And you've made a big impact on the environment. A very good one. I have to get out there. How do you get out there if you don't have a car?
Well, if you're in Manhattan, you can take a ferry.
Yes.
Which is right near the Irish Hunger Memorial.
Yeah.
And, you know, the boat will take you right to the site. You
Super.
Should go there.
I will.
You must see it. I mean,
we
can talk about it, but you got to see it.
That's always the way it is with architecture. You can only talk so much, and then at some point you got to go see it. You have to experience it. So you were telling me about the landscape architect you worked with.
We worked with Arnold Associates and Steve Letterock. And Henry Arnold were the landscape architects for the memorial. And Henry, who's retired now, you know, in the early days around the competition, what a wonderful man. He was also the landscape architect that worked with Maya Lin on the Vietnam Memorial. And, you know, you walk around with Henry, and he's a gentle giant. And he, you know, he quotes Thoreau randomly and, you know, speaks in Latin when he's addressing trees. I just don't know what's happening, but amazing. Actually, the trees on the memorial, the landscape, the mound has over 60 autumn flowering weeping cherry trees. And
Super. So
they blossom, actually.
In the autumn,
and again in the spring. So
nice.
It's this, you know, it's this really wonderful, you know, regeneration of growth and flowering and blossoming. It's just, you know, the trees are incredible.
Yeah.
They make the landscape.
So what I wanted to ask you, one of the things I wanted to talk about was, when you walked the site, once you'd been awarded this commission, did it, the experience of the site actually really there, you know, now it's real, now you have to get serious about it. Did you adjust the proportions any? Did you change the axis?
No, you know, and I don't usually say, well, maybe I say no a lot, but no, you can't, right? The proportions make that symbolic. There was actually controversy with this project from a group of people who thought that the mound and the walls would block the skyline of Manhattan, which is just, for me, ridiculous because...
Yeah, it's a big park.
It's a huge park. And, you know, there's a walkway, you know, miles of walkway that, you know, right on the shoreline. And you know, you could, you know, there's parking lot, there's trees in the parking lot that if you stand behind a tree, you can't see Manhattan either, you know. You just can't.
Yeah, if you turn around, you can... Oh. Not see it either. Okay,
that closed it.
Yeah,
you know.
That. Huh. So.
So the proportions never changed because they needed not to ever change, and you know, we did value engineer to a set of drawings to go to construction to get this project in budget.
Yeah.
For the 10th anniversary, and the value engineering was that we removed the stainless off the outside of the walls.
But that's okay in a way, isn't it?
It is okay in a way. I mean, now you see the concrete, which is the structure,
mm-hmm.
the strength that holds the stainless.
Yeah.
And it, you know, You look outside, you know, the concrete also has some kind of resemblance to the slurry walls that are in at the National Memorial.
Yeah, that we got to know so well when the debris was removed and and the miraculous happenstance that the slurry walls, the bathtub, as they sometimes called it, were still holding in the river despite all of that destruction that had gone on. So there's a little history lesson.
And then you slip inside the memorial walls, and the stainless takes over the beauty of the sun and the sky and the names and the magnitude of loss, sacrifice that New Jersey unfortunately paid on September 11th.
Well, that's a good point. It's not just the people who were victims. It's also the people who didn't have a second thought about going to help rescue, which is an awesome thing and a colossally fantastic thing.
Yeah.
So
the process with stainless has been, just kind of, as from a construction standpoint, right? As an artist, a maker, you're thinking about.
You can use the word designer.
Yeah, designer.
But as a maker.
As a maker.
Yes. As a form maker.
There's a little bit of experimentation that we did there.
Yeah. How did you keep the steel so flat? Are there ribs that are welded onto the back?
There are. Yeah. The structure is tied back to the concrete walls with a whole super frame. Actually, the part of the value engineering was originally we had intended to have each stainless steel panel attached to the concrete wall. And then we got a little smarter, I think. And our value engineering, when we started thinking a little bit more, how are we going to do this economically?
Mm-hmm.
And we prefabricated columns of the stainless. The walls are 30 feet tall. And so we figured out how to do it better in the shop first.
Mm-hmm.
And so columns are of stainless were erected, were done in the shop and then shipped to the site and then erected next to each other.
Mm-hmm.
That, I think, took a lot of load off of the erectors.
Sure.
Because less adjustability and less problems with aligning the panels from one to another.
So there's a system of girts behind this, the steel, the finish surface.
Right.
And those, where they go into little slotted hangers or something?
Well,
like
there's
that?
Two. There's an anchoring system at the base and an anchoring system at the top, and then leveling bolts against the concrete wall, two in between those two anchoring points. And I think that was really clever, actually. And, the structural engineers, Arup Engineering has designed, the Millennium Bridge in London. They're fantastic.
Well, if you have an experimental one-off, they're the people to go see.
Yes.
Because they work it out for real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, these columns allowed us, if you think of a tile in a bathroom floor, and if you had to place each tile individually, the way that the light would reflect upon that, if little angles off here, little angles off there, the light starts bouncing everywhere. So our system's flatter with these units. Another kind of really interesting and, something that was a little tricky was actually the acid etching process that we used to engrave the names. Not sure it's been done before because we did a lot of experimenting with seeing that through. And we actually had to go through a couple of acid etchers until we found the person responsible for making this on time. As a Great Lakes acid etching in Ohio.
So it was done in acid instead of using a CNC miller.
Exactly.
That, for those of you who are listening who are civilians, it's computer numerical code. It's a way of having a computer program
to etch
with a with a tool that routes, but right. you did it with a masked off area and acid,
right? And then a little glass bead sandblast, which actually that final touch from these acid from Great Lakes acid etching,
yeah,
created an outline on everybody's name, a gentle outline.
Oh, nice!
Which catches the sun, and not just the sun. But we have lighting at the base of the walls mm-hmm. that illuminates the names at night.
Yes.
And it's the relationship between this acid etching, this etching process that we did, and these LED lights mm-hmm. that was really hard and really amazing, because at nighttime, when the walls illuminate, the whole memorial changes. It mm-hmm. becomes a room. It really feels like a room.
Sure.
And the names are lit, and they almost halo off the plane of stainless steel.
Nice.
It's just, you know.
Well, you should write a paper and publish it so that other people can replicate that and use this discovery.
I'm not telling anyone.
Well, it's out now. Yeah, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what...
Well, the craftiness of what... of what we do is endlessly fascinating. I mean, that's...
It's an experimental... I mean,
sure.
It's somewhat experimental, because you're seeking effects that you can only achieve if you continuously design or think about what you're getting. And it's not just about drawing it, putting it on paper, submitting your paper, and having someone build it. You have to work with the fabricators.
Sure.
And you have to work with the contractors
yeah.
to negotiate what you see mm-hmm. and what you want them to build. And that's why I buzzed all those people, because those people are the people that helped me do this.
Well, they did it with you and Fred in collaboration. And that's what makes great works great, because
it's a
many,
process.
Many, many, many minds and hearts working together.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not just a vision and you hand over the documents and they just go along and they do it. You continue until it's done.
And I will tell you a trick. I'm going to tell you one trick that I learned in this process. I kept the stainless steel erectors at a B- throughout the entire process.
You were grading them along the way?
This is the only way to make men work. You know, you got to keep them in line. And so,
okay.
But they knew that I was just trying to make it perfect.
Uh-huh. And at the end, did you give them an A or just an
yes,
A minus?
Yes, they knew.
Or a B plus?
Lisa, you know, I have a wonderful photo with the workers, the stainless steel erectors that we took at the end of the day. I mean, those are the photos that mean a lot from a kind of construction perspective.
Well, either put them up on Facebook or send me a couple of those. I'd like to see those. They sound
okay.
Great.
Yeah.
Drew, you had a thought about what links people might speak as vox populi.
Yes, I'm not too sure what links in particular to send people to, but I think it would be a good thing definitely to mention a few places for people to go to get some more information on the memorial.
That's true. I think also... I mean, that's a great point. The Family Foundation has been thinking a lot about putting together their own New Jersey museum on 9/11, because not just the kind of making of the memorial and understanding the process, but there's also, yesterday was the dedication of the memorial, and there was a lot of family there, and there was a lot of running around and much to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, with the ceremony and everybody being there. And I escaped at one moment, as I do, I wander around. And I went inside to the exhibit that we had displayed with the original renderings and model.
Mm-hmm.
Voices of September 11th were there with quilts and information.
Where's that located?
Voices of September 11th? Or the exhibit.
Well, what you were looking at, the original renderings and so forth.
Oh, that's in Liberty State Park, right next to the memorial.
So it's in another structure.
Yeah, inside the terminal building.
Okay.
And
oh, yes, okay.
And I escaped there where they had only four of the original walls that were left on site from 2001. In 2001, when people first evacuated and families came to visit, somebody thought that they should put up some plywood walls, and people started posting and writing.
Those are still there.
And those were in the exhibit yesterday.
In the old Lackawanna Railroad Terminal there.
Yeah. And
in the park, yes.
And I just stood there. Because for me, that's where I went to think, you know? And those walls, I started crying. My friend, who is a historian for the park, came and counseled me. I mean, really. What a mess. But those walls were, you know, people lost their mothers, their fathers, their brothers, their sisters, their lovers. They lost their soulmates.
Yeah.
And, you know, in 2001 is when, you know, they wrote that about that. I hope that the state and the Family Foundation is able to put together a museum to display those artifacts, because it's education. I mean, this is a community filled with sorrow, but it's also a historical event, the yes. United States of America.
Yeah.
And it means something that people know what it means.
Of the world.
Of the world.
Yes.
You're right, of the world. And it means something that people understand. What happened in New Jersey, you know?
Yes, which, for those of you listening from overseas, is just across the river from Lower Manhattan.
Right.
It's a wonderful state.
Right.
Full of really...
Nearly 3,000 people died on 9/11, 2,600 of them, approximately, at Ground Zero, where the World Trade Centers were. 746 of those from the state of New Jersey. I mean, that's a second hardest hit state.
Sure.
So it's big.
Yeah. Well, it's all one country. We're all one people from many, many different places. So does the Family Foundation have a link yet?
Yes. www.newjerseymemorial.com, I think. Sorry. We'll put the link on the website.
Okay.
I'm bad with WWWs and phone numbers.
It's okay. Do you or does Fred have a website for this?
Yes, Frederick Schwartz Architects.
Okay.
Yeah, Google.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay. Well,
what else do you want to talk about, Curtis? What do you want to know?
Well, we already talked about it before we went on the air. I want to know that you're going to become licensed.
Yes.
I mean, you're too good a designer to just be continuing to be a designer without becoming an architect.
Okay.
You know, that's kind of important. But that's a whole nother conversation
for another
day.
Yeah, we could have a whole radio show on that.
We've had many, actually, bitching and moaning about... You can't be an architect unless you're actually an architect. Otherwise, you're just a designer. And architects are... Well, here's one thing that is appropriate. Because we're licensed to protect the public safety, because we create structures, you know, the old law of Hammurabi, if the roof fell down and killed your client's son, well, then your son had to get killed. We have an implied social contract because of the state of our licensure to do the right thing. We're endowed with the rights and responsibilities of protecting the public. So in a much longer timeline, similarly to the police and the fire department professionals, we as design professionals have an implied social contract to do the right thing for our society and for the world. From that, we take it to trying to design things that are beautiful, but also beyond how it looks, how it works, or what it means. From that, then, has sprung the green world of doing the right thing.
Well, I'm still trying to figure out if I just want to be an artist.
That's okay, too. You'll get there in the fullness of time, God willing. I, myself, have always been so obsessed with how do we make it, how do we put it together, that anything short of being worthy of the professional title of architect wasn't good enough. I couldn't just be a scientist. I could be an engineer, but then if you're going to be an engineer, then you have to be a professional engineer. If you're going to be an architect, you have to be a professional architect. That's my world. I like to prove that I'm worthy of people's trust. I'm not saying that you haven't proven. I think you have.
I'm going to go.
It's a beautiful thing that you and Fred have done. I urge everyone to go out and take that ferry ride, go across and see the 9/11 memorial. We're almost, well, it's another 6.5 hours left here in New York for 9/11. God willing, nothing untoward will happen. It's been a day of memorializing, remembrance, and I'm glad that you could come out and share some of your thoughts.
Thank you.
This is Burning Down the House on Heritage Radio Network. Let's go out with some music that James Taylor sang this afternoon at Ground Zero. Thank you for listening. Keep the faith.
So this old world must still be spinning around. Yes, and I still love you. So close your eyes. You can close your eyes. It's all right. I don't know no love songs. I can't sing the blues anymore. Yeah, but I can sing this song. And you can sing this song when I'm gone. It won't be long before another day. We're gonna have a good time. And no one's gonna take that time away. You can stay as long as you like. Only close your eyes. You can close your eyes. It's alright. No, I don't know no love songs. I can't sing the blues anymore. Sure, but I can sing this song. Yes, and you can sing this song when I'm gone.